once again coming to you. Remember, this is a podcast that's really built to help student athletes, help them get an edge in this whole recruiting process, right? It's a crazy world. There's a lot of information going out that is not true. And there's a lot of people who have ability as athletes, but they're missing the mark and they're missing these different opportunities to help them get a college scholarship. So from time to time, I like to have guests on my show that are experts in their field. And this guest, his name is Logan Walters. He's been a PT for 8 years, but I've got a chance to watch him, right? And how he goes about his business when he's treating athletes who've gone down the road of maybe an ACL tear. That's kind of like his niche. That's his specialty. But, you know, me having a ACL and MCL, like the things that he does is totally different. It's game changing to what, you know, I was going through this process 25 years ago. But I mean, there's no ice, there's no stem, there's none of that type of stuff that you know, typical athletes that we do when we're recovering. So he has a certain way of going about his business. And it's dynamic, it's cutting edge. And I just had to have him on the show. Logan, thank you for being a guest on the Scholarship Athlete Podcast, man. Can you tell my listeners a little bit more about you?
Yeah, thanks for having me, Alex. So I've been a PT for 8 years now. But like Alex mentioned, I have a real passion for working with ACLers. And it is where I've niched down and where I do most of my work now. So I work with a lot of people in person and now a lot of ACLers online as well. So my story starts back to when I had my own ACL injuries. I had a pair of them back in college. So my sophomore year is when I tore my first ACL. And so I was going to a small D3 school, not a scholarship athlete. I was a walk-on athlete. But I guess dating back even before my injuries, my story really started with what I didn't have access to or what I wasn't doing going into college. So I never really understood performance training or how to train and lift and move like an athlete to help improve what I'm doing on the basketball court. It was all just basketball skill related things, which, you know, in basketball culture, that's been something that's changed a lot over the years in a good way, where we're trying to get more of them into the weight room and learn how to train. But for me, I didn't have much exposure to that growing up. So when I got to college, I experienced this first ACL tear. And at the time, this is back before I was in PT school and before I knew really what was what or what I needed or, you know, what was good and what was bad. Went through the pretty traditional physical therapy process. It's kind of the stereotypical kind of male physical therapy, where I was in PT for about 4 or 5 months. And then it was time for me to go back to school. And at the time I was like, all right, back to school, ready to play basketball, I guess. I don't know. Yeah. And at the time I didn't even know. I had no idea that I didn't get what I needed, you know. And now we know, and most of these athletes, ACL rehab is a 9 to 12 month recovery process. And there's a lot that goes into it. And I didn't get any of that. I was far from ready. And I tried to play basketball about 7 months after my first injury. Obviously didn't go very well.
Yeah, you Wolverine up in here.
Oh, man, it wasn't good. So there's a lot of things that went into it. I was visibly not ready. And in the back of my mind, I knew I wasn't, but like, I didn't even understand the risk was that high.
Yeah.
And when we talk about risk now I know, for athletes under the age of 25 that have an ACL tear, 1 out of 4 of them experience a second ACL tear. And that could be in regards to either one of their knees. And that's pretty high.
25%.
25%. It's technically like 23.something%, but about 1 in 4. That's pretty bad. You know, there's a lot of things that go into it with poor rehab or decision making and guidance. But the injury risk is still high regardless for anyone coming back from an ACL injury. And I didn't know that at the time. No one was telling me not to play. I didn't have any testing. I didn't have all these things that I preach about on a daily basis now. So I went through the process again. Round two, did the whole rehab thing, and I still didn't get good rehab because I still wasn't really sure what I needed. And it took me years to really figure it out, after I went through physical therapy school and started understanding what you need to rehab properly and all the things that I was missing. And eventually I was able to, build myself back up. So I knew there was more in the physical therapy world too for me to be able to provide people what they need, because generally, traditional PT fails athletes that have ACL surgeries too. They, when they're working through a traditional model, they're under the restrictions of insurance and things that dictate how long they get to go to physical therapy, and they might only be allowed to go for 4 or 5 months at a time before they run out of benefits and they're told, okay, it's over now. Or their physical therapist just doesn't have the amount of the time that they can spend with them and take them through these progressions to really get them back to their sport. That luckily it Roke, and with the way that I do things now, I'm actually able to use all my resources and spend time with people and really give them what they need. So my mission lies in trying to help ACLers restore their athletic identity and be able to get back to playing at a high level again and not experience a second injury like myself, because there's a lot of ways that they can make sure that they've reduced their risk as much as possible, done their due diligence before they're back on the field or back on the court again.
Man, I love that. So after doing this for as long as you have, what are some of the risks that's already there? First, what are the sports that you see typically, they have the most ACL tears? Like, what are the sports? And then also, what is this? Is there a difference between female and male athletes and how they go about their business?
So the sports that we see the highest risk in are what we call level one cutting sports. So
Ooh,
those
okay.
are football, soccer, basketball, essentially field or court sports,
Gotcha.
are considered level one cutting sports. And then when we get even more specific, the highest demographic for tears are female soccer and basketball are really high.
For female or both?
Well, both, but generally then if we break it down even more with male versus female, rates are higher in females and youth females.
Gotcha.
And soccer's at the top of the list.
It's at the top. So female soccer players at the top.
As far
Okay.
as the demographic that we see with the highest percentage of ACL tears.
Why
And
is
the
that?
main yeah, so it's the nature of the sport, right? Like with soccer, because even separate from football, right? Like maybe like a corner, like a position you played, a corner or any type of D back would probably fall into a similar risk category as a general soccer player, because it's really the sports where there's a reactive agility component where their movements are dictated by what someone else is doing.
Okay.
So they're moving forward, backward, side to side, any which way, but a lot of times they have to react to someone else versus a sport like baseball, where, whether you're hitting or whether you're on the field, you usually get to, other than where the ball's going, you usually get to control, okay, I'm going to run to that base or run to go get that ball that went into the gap over there. You're rarely in situations other than like in a pickle where they're throwing a ball back and forth where you have to do reactive movements. And that's where we see the majority of these ACL tears are non-contact injuries through a reactive deceleration or a rapid change of direction. So that's why those sports kind of fall at the top of the list there. And then as far as that female versus male thing, there's lots of risk factors that can go into someone being at a higher risk for an ACL tear. And a lot of it comes down to strength. And it's not to
Strength, okay.
say, females are weaker than males, but when we look at someone's strength and we can measure how strong someone's quad is and how strong their hamstrings are, most female athletes, just genetically and their anatomy, they're pretty quad dominant individuals. but generally their quads, unless they're experienced in strength training at a young age, haven't caught up to where they're at on a skill level for what their body needs, right? So it's usually the skill exceeds the body's capacity to withstand the forces for that skill. And some of that's just theory, you know, that we see ACL tears. I think they're more prevalent and more prevalent now. I mean, I know I probably see them more often and I'm a little more aware than most people, but I think just with athletes becoming faster and, you know, being able to do things out in the field or a court that maybe they couldn't do 20, 30 years ago. This is where we're seeing an uptick in these injuries because the training isn't keeping up with it.
Oh, that's good. So speaking of training, what should athletes, whether male or female, and they're in this level one, right? Mm-hmm. So this level one where they're reactive cutting, we need to get stronger. I want to talk a little bit about that later, but like, should we start moving in multiple directions? These athletes aren't training like laterally or rotationally or single leg or whatnot? What are some of the things that they should be doing? They should be implementing in their training program.
Yeah. Cause there's not all training is equal like everything else, right? You know, there's a difference between, you know, training like an athlete and training like a bodybuilder or a power lifter, right?
Yeah.
You know, if your goal is to just get big, pick up lots of weight, anybody can teach you how to do that. We'll make you big, right? But you might not move very well. So the way that we look at training is that we want to expose you to skills and movements that you're going to see on the field. We talk about owning positions and space and moving in three-dimensional movement patterns where you have to be strong and own your body so you know what to do when you get there. Because a lot of athletes end up training and lifting where they only move straight up and down or straight forward and backward. And then you put them on a field, like a big, strong linebacker, put them in the field and make them move sideways a little bit. And he looks silly and he looks slow, right? You know, so if we can train those positions and get strong there, then the body's going to know what to do when it gets in the position in the first place.
I love that. Yeah. So, and then, you know, talking about like, how should they be training? Like, let's just talking about like lower body. What should a program look like, you know, in terms of like, man, like isometrics, like when should kids start like this isometric training? When you talk about owning this position, so owning them for a long time, that's because that's what isometric is. And then how do you also train? Because one of the things when I was training athletes is like, man, we worked on stopping before we do any accelerating and all this fancy, beautiful speed work. I got to teach you how to stop because I know that's the highest percentage of injuries come is from decelerating, landing, stopping. So what should kids start to implement?
Yeah. That's a really good question too. With like, we talk about youth athletes. You want to introduce them to this stuff when they're young. So they have a foundational base to work off of as they get older and they start to get more skilled at their sport, right?
Yeah.
And that's a tricky thing because now we see specialization in sport becomes a lot more prevalent at a younger age in more sports now. You know, it used to be just like gymnastics or something like that, or ice skating when they're like five. You know, they got to dedicate the rest of their life to this if they want to be really good. But now we're seeing, you know, football, baseball, like, you're playing the sport year round now if you really want to make it, right? So I think the big thing is like at a young age, before they have to really specialize and play year round, that's when we start to just introduce them to the foundations of weight training, where we talk about foundational movement patterns, like owning full range of motion with squatting, lunging, balance, jumping and landing mechanics. You know, there's a right and a wrong way to go about it in a training scenario, right? And then as they get older, I think you ask like how they should train, that's when things can start to look a little bit more and more like their sport the more advanced they get. But when they're younger, what they need more of is the basics and just learning how to move well first. and then make it sexy later on after they're already playing at that high level and they know how to train and they've already, you know, showed that they're putting the work in.
So when you say basic, I'm gonna cut you off real quick, but when you say basics, what is that?
Yeah, so that's just the, you know, because we have like these youth athletes that are maybe very good for their age, right? Say like a youth golfer, a 10-year-old golfer or something, he's out there, you know, he'd beat us by 20 or 30 strokes probably. And, you know, they parents, they come in asking for golf training. We want a golf specific trainer, right? Because I work with golfers sometimes too, but that 10-year-old doesn't need more golf specific work. He needs to learn how to, you know, all he does is swing golf club. He needs to learn how to squat, how to jump, how to run. This is what's going to move the needle as far as athleticism and being stronger and swinging the club faster. It's being able to take ownership of his body. So when I say foundations, it's like sprinting mechanics. Like if you, I know that you teach sprint mechanics and stuff like that a lot. If you get these kids that come in at, you know, when they're older, 17, 18, maybe have never been taught how to run properly, it's a lot harder versus the kid that maybe you start to teach them when they're 9, 10 years old, right?
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's good. That's good. So I know, because I've seen you work with like testing, like how important is testing when you have a, you know, someone, one of your athletes come in there and they've been in a brace, right? And then now they get the brace off and now they start to really, you know, kind of amp up the rehab. When do you start to test them? And what are some of those tests? Like, what do they look like to, yeah, I mean, I don't know, do they go to like another level of sport or of play? Like, what does that typically look like?
Yeah, it's the basis of my entire decision-making process from the time they come in the door, right? It actually starts before surgery. There's testing we even do before someone has an ACL surgery, right?
Oh,
if we're talking specifically about that, all the way up until we decide, are you ready to play your sport, right? So I use a saying, like, if you're not testing, you're guessing, right? So you can never really know what the body is capable of without testing it. It's a big wormhole. I could go into a lot of different things here. Like a lot of athletes, what the norms are and what we hear out there, most athletes, and maybe you can speak to this, back when you had your knee surgery, like who cleared you to, who said, all right, Alex, you're ready to go play football again?
Oh man, that was,
do you know who told you?
I think it was our PT.
And okay, that's cool.
PT, but a lot of it was based off of Cybex, this machine. I don't know if you remember watching Rocky IV. Right?
It
was like a quad and hamstring
machine.
Yeah, yeah.
See,
I was sitting
awesome.
Down
that's
and I was and so once I hit a certain level, then I could be able to, you know, start to amp it up.
Yeah.
But but it was also like, you know, I also had to get cleared by Coach Radcliffe, who he was out there and he'd teach me how to run, how to cut and how to do all these different things. So then I can be able to play.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's good. All right. You had a good experience there, right? And you succeeded. You got back out there. You were able to play at a very high level, at the highest level again. Right. So your story though is the uncommon one. All right. Like from what we see now, actually, they've done some studies on PTs that do strength testing, like that thing you were talking about when you kick your leg forward and backward.
Yeah.
That test, in some capacity, that test has to be done in order to know what someone's knee can handle. There's a lot of different ways to do it and different types of equipment.
Okay.
But you have to do strength testing to be able to know. And only if they pulled a bunch of PTs in the US and like 30% of physical therapists do some form of strength testing for ACLs.
30%
for decision making.
Hold on. 30% of PTs do some type of test to help their athlete or for them to get
a
the information.
Test. Yes.
Oh, wow.
So here's how they teach you in PT school. What the other 70% might do is you sit on a bench and they hold their hand in front of your leg and they say, kick as hard as you can. And then they say, all right, 0 to 5. Oh, that was a 5 out of 5. You're good. That was strong. Okay.
What?
They teach us that in school. We get a doctorate
Oh.
for that. Okay. So, which is crazy, right? It's
Yeah.
crazy. So, yeah, a lot of, it's not something that's commonly taught. So a lot of these sports PTs have to learn it on their own and learn ways to implement it. But that test where we're assessing someone's quad strength and hamstring strength is what I'll implement that around the 12-week mark after surgery. And it's part of my decision-making process for determining if someone's ready to start running. And then we look for a certain number to be able to decide that. And then we use that same test to help determine readiness for sprinting. And then again, for readiness for return to sport, for getting back to cutting and that kind of thing. But it's a small piece of the puzzle, right? Like you were saying, like knowing how strong someone is important, but how they move also matters. All right. So there's a regimen of other tests and things where we're assessing vertical jump height from side to side, distance jumps from side to side, but then there's also a quality component too, where we're looking at how someone moves. And especially for athletes during those tests where we're looking at their jumping, we break down their decelerating and cutting and all these things, and we look for certain ways that they move because good athletes can adopt different movement patterns around a weakness, or they find new ways to achieve a means where they're not really utilizing their knee. They might not use the strength that they have, which places them at a higher risk for injury. So there's a whole gamut of testing, but yeah, it's something that's super important, man. I use it from, like I said, before surgery. We'll do that type of test to help this, if we get someone's quad up to being as 80% as strong as the other side before they have surgery, their success rate after surgery goes up by 2.7. That's pretty good. Yeah. If they prehab and get really strong and move really well before they get the surgery, it helps reduce their risk of getting hurt and again in the first place. So there's a lot of these things that like I wish I knew going through the process myself that I never knew, that there's really good ways to reduce these injury risks and make sure that, you're as strong as you're possibly gonna be.
I love that, man. Shoot,
Yeah.
I just remember doing, when I was playing in collegially and also in the pros, man, we would start strength training and we would do all isometric type of things. And then in the pros, we started training single leg, right? But even then, like we weren't doing a whole bunch in the weight room lateral movements. We weren't working on jumping in quality, like landing. And not until later on. And I started to, get into the whole training world. It's like, man, this is something that, I started to learn and I started to see not a whole bunch of people are teaching like how to land and what muscles are so important. Like I found out how strong or how important the glute is in terms of like being a shock absorber and, keeping the athletes out of valgus, right? Where when you land, your knees go in. So what are some other like lifts that you would like to see like athletes, whether they're in rehab towards the end of rehab, so where they're about to get out to play, or they're already playing, what are some lower body lifts that, man, you should be doing? They should be doing.
Yeah, I think generally it's unilateral training and split stances is a big part that people miss when they start getting closer, or they feel like they get to a point, because there's a point with athletes where they hit a phase where they get really confident. They feel really good before they're actually where they need to be, which is where the testing comes in to be able to show them. But a lot of them can math, like if they're doing a lot of bilateral, like squatting, trap bar deadlifting, regular deadlifting, where both legs are working the same, just like the jumping and cutting, they can hide imbalances and be able to use the other side and not know it, maybe. So things like Bulgarian split squats, they're a staple. They're probably top of the list, or rear foot elevated split squats. That one's probably top of the list as far as a go-to single leg exercise that you can use for strength and for power. Loading up split stance positions, like When someone's getting closer to in season and we want to keep the stress a little bit lower using things like isometrics, like you said, where we get them into these split stance positions, have them hold for certain amounts of time. We can load them up really heavy and make it hard, but they're not going to get really sore.
Yeah.
And they can just get strong and be able to own that position. Yeah. So I think it just more and more unilateral work is a big component of it.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. No, that's good. That's good. What, you have, something that you do online. Can you tell us a little bit more about that? Like, how do you go about that? Yeah, what exactly it is?
Yeah. Yeah. So I work exclusively with ACLers online. And you know, the type of people who work with me, I mentioned that I help them try and restore their athletic identity and then get back to playing again at a high performing level. You know, so the type of athletes that really seek me out are the ones that I try and make them aware of a problem that they might not be getting what they need, because a lot of athletes and parents don't know that they might not be getting what they need. You know,
but they don't know. Yeah.
They don't know, right? Yeah. They, yeah. Like me, myself, you know, that a lot of the trap that a lot of us fall into is the nice PT. All right. So there's a difference in getting a nice PT that you get along with and that maybe truly wants to help you versus one that specializes in knowing how to rehab ACLs and rehab athletes to get you back to actually doing what you want to do. Right. I draw the comparison to like a surgeon, you know, that when you get your ACL surgery, you're going to go get your surgery from the guy or the girl that does nothing but ACL surgeries, basically, or just nothing but knees. You know, they do hundreds of these a year. That's all they do. You're not going to go to the surgeon that does shoulders and ankles to go get your ACL done.
Yeah.
So I think we need to, if you really want to achieve, you know, getting back to a high level, if you have high level goals, you need to work with someone that knows what they're doing with your type of injury, because it's pretty intricate when we get down to it as far as how to progress it safely and smartly to make sure you don't get hurt again. So the way that I do things is I meet with people all over the world or all over the country, and then kind of everyone's at a different place when I meet them, right? You know, it's great if we can talk early on in the rehab process, but some people we don't interact until they're, you know, 4 or 5 months down the line, and maybe they're struggling with certain things and they start to realize they're not getting what they need. But then we build them an individualized approach. So the one thing I do that I'd say is different from the traditional model and the things that you'll see a lot is there's no protocol and there's no one size fits all program for someone. Like if you're 4 months out from your surgery, you don't just get the, here's your 4 month exercises, like go ahead. It never works like that because everyone's at a different part of their process. And so I fall back to my testing, where anyone I work with, we start with an evaluation wherever they are and we assess the way that they move. And then we set some baseline goals of here's where you're at and here's where we're trying to go to get to the next phase. And then we program for you. And then I program a week at a time because things change quite a bit during the process with different struggles that people go through. And it's through, I use an app-based program that they'll use and they can go through their routine and see videos and, you know, be able to ask me questions and submit videos for me to break down and give them some feedback on. And we hop on a weekly call and chat about how the week went, make some goals moving forward. And then a really cool part of it is all these people that I work with, they get to interact with each other inside of a little community of other ACLers and people that are going through this. Cause you know, sometimes you feel like you're in a bubble and no one understands you when you're going through an injury like this. So it's cool to be able to, you know, ask other people questions, tell your stories, share your wins, things like that. And, just helps address that mental side of things, because that's a big aspect that, you know, a lot of athletes aren't going to talk about or maybe don't want to address. Is it's a grind mentally just as much as it is physically. So
absolutely,
just try and help them feel like they have a resource to address all those needs in one place.
Man, that is so cool.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that I, you know, when I see you talking to, you know, your patients or whatnot, is like, you give them a sense of confidence. right? Because they're coming in. I know for me, that was the one thing that, man, yes, I want to get up and I want to be able to play my game at a high level again, but my confidence was shot. Trying to find little wins like every week. I mean, it was really tough, really tough. But having someone like with your knowledge, your education, and your specialty, man, that can change the world for somebody who's going through this ACL. Like you said, you think that you're alone and whatnot. And that's one of the things that I like to do whenever I see you and you work with somebody who's fresh off of a surgery. And I come over there and I just, hey man, you know, whether it's a girl or a guy, it's like, man, I've been where you are. You're going to be okay. This is going to make you even better.
Yeah.
And so, and I can see their face light up because I know I had that conversation 20 some years ago and it, you know, with somebody who've gone through it and he's playing at a high level. And I heard that and just like, oh man, it changed, man. And they don't know, and those PTs back in the day, they don't know half the stuff that you know now and the technology. So that is really cool. How can people get a hold of you and find out more about, you know, with that online the app or like, how can they find out more?
Best way to contact me is through social media on either Instagram or TikTok. Instagram's probably the best place to get in contact with me. I want to make sure I get my handle right. So it's Logan.Walters_PT.
Cool. I have that in the show notes. So great. Don't nice. Worry about
yeah.
it.
Yeah. 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 So that's the best way to, you know, that's where I share, you know, how I work with my athletes and in person and online, and to get a little insight on how we do things and show how it's a little different from the norm. But if anyone has any questions or if they're, you know, if they have a son or a daughter going through this process right now, I'm happy to chat. People usually reach out and we communicate and I can set up calls and chat to people through a Zoom call and help guide them in the right direction, whatever, you know, path that is. Cause you know, with you, you know, helping athletes get scholarships and get back to playing, I know that from some of the athletes I work with, that's a big, you know, point of contention for them in their rehab, that they feel like sometimes it's a death sentence to have this major injury. Especially if they're in like a pivotal part of their recruiting process or their recruiting years, that it can feel pretty daunting. So, you know, it's good to hear stories from guys like you that have overcome, you know, those type of injuries. And, the more they look, they can see there's really successful high level athletes that have gotten through the same thing. So there's a path to get them there. But a lot of it's on them and their parents, really, to make sure that they find the right resources to make it happen. It's one of those things that doesn't just get better with time. Which I'm sure you know, right?
Yeah. Man, this has been so enlightening, man. Thank you so much, Logan. And man, I'm really excited for people, whether they have a ACL injury or not. Like, it's always a possibility when you're playing sports, especially like you said, those level one cutting and reacting type of sports. So this is going to help out a lot of people, man.
Cool. Thanks for having me, Alex. This has been a lot of fun. I love talking about this stuff, obviously. So I appreciate you having me on here.
Yes, sir.